I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line, tips for 2011 business planning. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, to help keep people and organizations and staff off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style assessment to raise the hiring bar, and we assist sales and operations to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters, so having smooth sailing along the way. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, assuming we have time, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you can consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is Mark Lefko. Mark's a cool guy, by the way, personal friend for many, many years, mentor, founder and CEO of the Lefko Group, and is a dynamic corporate strategist with over 30 years of business experience to his credit. While spending years working for one of the big four CPA firms and acting as CFO and then COO of the 12th largest mortgage company in the nation and chairman of Vistage, Mark found that he had a knack for building the corporate team and increasing revenues and productivity for uniting the team. To date, Mark has coached over 100 CEOs and led over 50 strategic planning processes and retreats for companies that so they can get the most out of their executive teams, including companies such as Patagonia, Lockton Insurance, Great America, numerous banks, financial institutions, mid-cap companies, nonprofits, small companies, large companies. Mark has worked with them. Mark is also the author of a book called Unlock the Power of Your Team. And you can download that either as a special gift. You can find that at Mark's site, and next to his picture you'll see a place you can click later on and get that. Or you can actually get a hard copy of the book, too, which is amazing. And Mark joins us as our guest today on the topic of 2011, your best year ever. And I feel privileged to have Mark with us today to share ideas that will help us each in preparing for the future for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program, and the topic will be 2011 and Beyond with futurist David Hooley. David is the author of Shift Age, and I believe he'll be the next Thomas Friedman in the world. So with all that and the welcome to Mark, thank you for being a guest on Open Line, Mark. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Dana. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate this opportunity to talk about a subject that is very near and dear to my heart. And I really have to say that, you know, in my experience and in my opinion, that, you know, really great business planning is all about unlocking the power of your team. You know, and it's really taking, you know, an approach that is really not academic, but is, you know, is really rather interactive, and it is, you know, it is very iterative in that process. It's really not, you know, it's really, you know, the business planning is really a process and has to be really looked at, you know, in that way versus just an event. So many times companies will say, okay, we want to get together a strategic planning retreat. Let's figure out who we're going to get together and let's schedule a day. And in reality, it really is an ongoing process. We live in a very dynamic environment and world today, and it's really important for us to have our business planning process reflect that. And, you know, the business planning process is great, But the most important aspect of that is really is the team that participates and commits and consents to making it all happen. I'm going to talk about all the various components of that as we, you know, as we get going. But I want to continue to underscore the team. Sometimes in organizations, they'll delegate it to someone in the financial area to come up with a strategic plan or business plan. And I think, you know, in many cases, you can come up with some great ideas, but you're missing a big part of the puzzle. You know, and a lot of this, I'm going to start to take you through the process. The real importance of this process has to be driven from the very top by the CEO. And by say the CEO being the key sponsor, you know, and leader, he's going to set the tone, you know, in the direction of the company. That being said, I think it's very important that the CEO really drive the process but be a participant as well and not necessarily take the lead in, you know, in making sure that it's facilitated, but be a participant like everyone else. But it is his responsibility to be involved in offering perspective and final guidance on the vision, you know, of the company. And it really has to start with the vision and mission of the company. And many times organizations start with that, and they'll spend days coming up with vision statements and mission statements. My personal view is it's important to have that vision and mission and direction of the company, but I don't think that the return is there to spend days and days coming up and wordsmithing it. I think that that the direction needs to ultimately be set by the CEO. And the vision and mission, in order to really draw the process, needs to be something that people are very excited about and they get passionate about. Like Disney says, their vision is to have the happiest place on earth. Or Southwest Airlines, you know, saying, you know, we make air travel affordable. When you come up with some kind of a vision for an organization that the entire team can get behind, it really draws and propels the process. Besides the vision, and this is, you know, Dana alluded to the ebook that I had created, which is Unlocking the Power of Your Team Through Principles and Values, is a values component. And I want to invite you afterwards, down at the bottom of this website is a link to the, you know, to unlockthepower.net that will offer you an opportunity to receive a free copy of the ebook. And it will actually take you through the process that I use in helping a team to get clear on the importance of getting their values together, but also what's the process that they would use. And I go through step by step. So it is very much a how-to book, and it also gives some examples of some clients of mine, Patagonia, New Belgium Brewing, barrel companies, and how they've approached it and how important values are in really drawing focus and pulling an organization together.
It's a phenomenal book. I'd recommend everyone downloading that later. It's a great gift. Thank you, Mark. Hey, a question came in, and I'd like to encourage those of you attending to toss questions out during our discussion today. What if the CEO isn't involved because it's either a division or maybe a large group or something like that?
Okay, you know, good question, Dana. You know, some organizations will have business unit planning and strategy, and they'll be responsible for creating that business plan. You know, the same concept applies. Whoever that leader is of that operating unit or division needs to be the sponsor. There's just another level of complexity, you know, or that needs to be considered in the planning process in a larger organization where they're asking and requesting each of the operating units to create their own business plan, which is to really make sure that, you know, that there's clarity on the part of whoever the most senior executive is in that operating unit as to the overall corporation's vision and values, and making sure that that's considered in the scope of the process.
And this applies. We have some companies from other countries such as India that are attending our program. So, and this applies globally to any organization. Is that correct?
Absolutely right, Dana. Yeah. And you know, there's not one way. You know, there's not one way to do business planning or strategic planning or contingency planning. Mm-hmm. I think it. You know, so many times people believe that there's one particular way, one set of processes or an academic processes. And I believe that there really needs to be some flexibility in, you know, in how the process is orchestrated and who's going to be involved in it. And I think that probably, you know, maybe that's kind of a good segue into the next section here, which is the participants. You know, who should be involved in the planning process? And, you know, and in my experience, you know, there's not a hard and fast rule. I do think it is important that the most senior folks be involved. An ideal size of the group, you know, the size of the group is also, you know, will dictate many times how effective the process can be. I like to see a process that's typically between 7 and 12 people. I have a client that's a very large construction company that wants to include more of their senior executive level members into the process, and there's 21 of them. So what we've wound up doing is separating this process into two pieces. There are 7 members on the executive committee, and what we'll do is in advance of the strategic planning retreat, we will have meetings with the executive committee where we will refine and define what are the objectives, the financial goals, the higher level direction for the company in that smaller group, then communicate it to the larger group, and then begin from that point to focus on what some of the initiatives are going to be, and to get their input and buy-in, and drill it right down to very specific action items and accountabilities. So there are several ways to break it up, but in the simplest sense, it should be the senior most team and representatives from all disciplines within the company. So whether it's not just the operations people, but sales and marketing and the IT area, the HR area, whatever the key areas of leadership within the organization are, should be involved, because as you begin to identify opportunities, it's important to have everyone's perspective in that. And also the individuals that have the ability to direct resources. Now, I get a question many times, should we have our board members? And I work with companies that are both public companies and companies that are owned by private equity firms. And the question arises, do we have our board members join us? And while there are always exceptions, I like to encourage the management team to have the planning process without their board members. Because, as I mentioned earlier in the program, I believe that unlocking the power of the team is really key. And so it's really bonding that the team, the senior team. And the business planning / strategic planning process can be a very bonding experience for the team, as long as the environment is set where everybody believes it's a safe environment to communicate and no stupid ideas, and it's all in how the expectation is set up. And when I work with a group, I take great pains to create that, and it starts early, and we'll talk about how it starts early in the process. But as it relates to board members, it's many times having a board member in there, even though they may offer great insights, can squelch some of the conversation, what may cause some reluctance to bring forward some sensitive issues and challenges that exist that need to be addressed in order for the company to be propelled forward. So I encourage you to give some serious consideration before inviting board members and consult with whoever is guiding you through the process. Subject matter experts, sometimes individuals are looking at, as part of their strategic plan, looking at identifying and moving into a completely different market area and direction. And my response to that is, you know, if you do want to have some additional input into the process, either have one of the senior executive members, senior management team members that is going to sponsor that initiative, be fully briefed on it, or else bring in a subject matter expert for just a small segment of, you know, the planning process.
Oh, those are great ideas.
Okay, let me, in terms of the planning process, and so many times people will say, well, let's just go ahead and have our planning meetings in our boardroom, You know, it saves everybody a lot of trouble, and it's cost-effective. And I would, you know, from my experience, you know, going through this process is very important to get everybody away from the office. There's certainly a lot of preparation work that can be done in advance, and we'll talk about, you know, we'll talk about that, you know, in terms of how to get ready in a little bit later here. But I strongly suggest that people get away so there's no distractions. They're able to, you know, to think more clearly. You know, the location, in my view, is very important. Someplace where it's not a sterile environment. It's not a space where there's no light. There's no energy to the environment. So it makes it very difficult for the creative juices to really get going. I really enjoy venues and highly recommend venues where it is possible to get outside on the breaks, where it's possible to have even a segment or a session where everyone can be outside, even in nature. You know, and there are some great venues out there where you can, you know, you can be outside and have a nature feeling, and I find that really helps to tap into the creativity.
Marco, could you give an example? Somebody just wrote a question and an example of the type of venue. I know you travel all over the country. Are there any places you could name off that people might be able to relate to?
Well, you know, for those that are in Southern California, there's a property that I really enjoy using. It's actually in Westlake Village, and it's not just because it's really convenient for me to get to. It's called the Westlake Village Inn. And what I appreciate about the property is they have a golf course on one side. They have it's a Mediterranean style property, so you feel like you're in a villa someplace. They have lakes. They have grounds to walk on. The rooms have floor to ceiling windows, so you have an ability to have a lot of natural light. And then on the breaks, people have an opportunity to go outside, and we can set up processes where people are doing some brainstorming right outside in nature.
And so that's the key, is if there's big windows and ponds or something like that to look out on.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, and if you don't have access to the ponds, and it's got to be a venue, I'd say the highest priority is to make sure there's lots of natural light.
Okay.
You know, a lot of natural light and nice aesthetic surroundings.
And you know, I know this has come up with different associations, like banking associates, that kind of thing, where the image of a resort comes into play. Is there a way to balance it out so you can get away, doesn't spend a lot of money, the image is okay?
Well, it's an interesting question. You know, when the AIG situation occurred, and there was a lot of press around companies taking these big extravagant retreats at extravagant resorts, I was actually engaged to work with a very large, one of the top five financial institutions that had already prepaid in Las Vegas for 100 people to be at an event actually that I was going to be leading. And because the visibility, you know, was such a concern to the bank, they actually had already prepaid for everything. They canceled that and moved it to their Chicago office and had everybody, you know, operate from there. So I think it's a real legitimate question, Dana.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say, you know, it's something to be considered and can't be ignored for the larger, highly visible public companies, particularly in a lot of the financial services areas. And there are still many wonderful venues around that are not high profile, that are not that expensive. And in the economy that we're in right now, I'm finding that a lot of the hotels and retreat centers are being very flexible with their pricing and accommodations.
A question just came in. I want to thank our friend from one of our Indian guests. It's after midnight there. He's working late. The question is, can the venue sometimes become a distraction?
I do believe that it can. You know, and a perfect example is having a retreat in an environment like Las Vegas. So many times people say, wow, we can get great prices in Las Vegas. There's so much to do at night. I think it really is important to be looking at what's the objective of getting everyone off-site. Are you there, you know, and I typically, when I do off-site retreats, mine are very business-focused. There are certainly retreats where people want to do just team building and they want to you know, do high ropes courses and they want to build things and so forth. My, you know, the types of retreats and events that I wind up leading are very business focused and bottom line focused. And so what I find is going to places where there are lots of distractions, you know, is not productive. So it's that fine line. It's the fine balance of not having too much to do where people are encouraged to, you know, to take advantage of nightlife and other distractions and therefore takes away from the ability to focus.
Thank you so much. Well, let's move to the next slide. And for those of you from India, Rajiv, thank you so much for staying up late where you're at and joining us today.
Great, thanks. So as it relates to getting ready for a retreat, so many times companies I know will say, okay, we're going to have everybody get together. Here's the date. Everybody just show up. And everybody shows up at a certain time, and it's, okay, so what are we going to do? I'm a big believer that one of the most important aspects of coming up with great planning, which then translates to our subject of, you know, having a great year, is really the preparation. So, you know, my typical timeline is, you know, to start the process, you know, planning and coordinating with the sponsors 2 months ahead of when you want to have the actual event. When I say that, I mean process, the first step in the process, but maybe the first offsite related to the business planning process. And the reason is to have an opportunity to be really clear and focused and make sure that the sponsor is really focused on what has to happen in order for them to feel like it was a good and worthwhile use of time and money. And that's really key. It's making sure everybody's clear on that. So many times what I'll use is I'll use surveys, online surveys, anonymous surveys, where we will have maybe 10 or 12 questions that will really be used. The first question is always, you know, what are some of the issues and challenges and opportunities that the company has that should be considered and covered, at, you know, in this process. So giving everybody an opportunity to weigh in on an anonymous basis into this planning process. And after that, then working with the sponsors and using the survey, and I also use the surveys as a way to benchmark, you know, some of the areas that may be issues that are holding the company back from effective business planning, such as, you know, how do you measure someone's, you know, the communication levels throughout the company, within the team and so forth, authority levels, job satisfaction and so forth, and using a survey can really help with, you know, setting a benchmark and an objective measurement on that. And then it's taking this and coming up with, you know, with a list of ideas and agenda items for the planning process and assignments, and actually giving a pre-planning assignment to the entire team. I find that that giving the assignment, bringing everyone, you know, and the assignment is given by a phone call. So I think it's very useful to create a phone call with everybody on it, or a meeting if everyone's in the same location, where the expectations are communicated, you know, ideas of what the agenda is going to look like, as well as how to prepare. And what I find is very important, and we'll get to this a little bit later as well, is using a SWOT analysis, which is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, using that as a basis for identifying priorities in the planning process is very key. And in most cases, for the preparation, I will ask the senior executive team members or whoever's going to be participating in this process to actually do a SWOT, their own assessment and SWOT, and then we will combine all those and look at that. And by doing that in advance, the efficiency and effectiveness of the meeting can be enhanced, because a lot of the information can be assimilated and then and summarized and then worked with as a group.
Hey, Mark, I have a question for you. Sometimes at the business planning meetings, there are people that will hold back, and they play the PC game, so they CYA themselves. How is that for acronyms?
All right.
How do you keep people how do you reduce that, or what have you seen?
You know, some of that, to a certain extent, will speak to the environment and the culture of the company. You know, many times in the upfront calls and in the upfront preparation and communications with the team, you know, there'll be a one-on-one meeting that I think is important with whoever's leading this. And there will be guidelines that, and expectations, you know, established up front. And whenever I'm working with the group, I'm always explaining to everybody that, you know, part of my job is to create that safe space so that everyone can show up, and also at the same time reserving the right to challenge and engage someone to be involved in the process. So I'm very respectful, but I will, but I also operate, and we were speaking before the call about how do you tune into your intuition, you know, through this whole process. And I will tune in, and I will, you know, if I sense that that is occurring, I will respectfully invite someone into the conversation. I will respectfully challenge them to be very engaged in the process.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And then in terms of, you know, preparation and foundation, you know, we talked about values a little bit earlier. I won't spend a lot more time on this, but I think that it's so critical. If we have a few minutes at the end, I'd like to share some views on how values and having an organization be really clear on their values, you know, can be such a productivity tool. It can be so useful in retaining employees and in attracting new employees and in evaluating business opportunities. It's really kind of the blueprint for productivity in this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And then the managing of expectations, which is what I was mentioning earlier. I think whoever's leading the planning process really needs to manage the expectations. You know, right from the very beginning, before you hit the session where everybody, you know, gets kicked off. That way, everything, you know, you're almost pre-paving what the outcome is going to be, and letting everybody know, you know, what you're expecting the outcome to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very helpful. So, you know, now coming to the next point of, you know, the facilitator or the leader of this. The facilitator, you know, can be someone from the outside or can be someone from inside. Sometimes organizations decide that they, you know, they want to use someone from the inside. Maybe there's a strategy and planning unit that they have that they want to bring someone in. The only caution I have with respect to that is if you have somebody that you're using to lead this process from the inside, there's always a tendency, you know, there's a risk that they may hold back if there's an issue that needs to be pressed or the group needs to be challenged or even a direction or a path that the organization is heading down needs to be challenged. They may or may not feel comfortable politically to step up and challenge the CEO or to challenge one of the senior executives, you know, on their positions. And therefore, you can lose an opportunity, you can miss an opportunity by that being the case. Also, I think, you know, in my view, it's very difficult for the CEO to be the facilitator of this process. Because same dynamic. The CEO may be very forceful. He has ideas, and politically people are uncomfortable standing up or stepping out and challenging that CEO. And I find it very effective to have the team, and again, there's a process to connecting the team so that everybody feels safe and the CEO is just one more person around the table. And sometimes it really means just coaching that CEO. And when I say CEO, I mean it could be that division manager or that division leader if it's a very large, you know, organization. So when I say CEO, that's my meaning. Whoever the most senior person is in whatever the business or operating unit happens to be.
Okay.
Is, you know, it would be the responsibility of that facilitator to guide and to lead that, you know, to coach that person on how to operate within the environment and be open. Also, I think it's really important that, you know, that facilitator have a curiosity. It's really not about the facilitator, not about the facilitator coming up with ideas and creating the business plan, but having that facilitator be curious and also at the same time be experienced in business and in a variety of disciplines of business and industries where they, you know, they're in a position where they can ask the questions and challenge respectfully and not be invested in what the ultimate outcome is. That's for that team to create and unlock. And so that's where a lot of the collaboration comes. And then having somebody who is sensitive to the dynamics of, you know, of the personalities and what's happening, you know, in this planning process. Again, these are all essential ingredients in my view to a highly effective business planning process. You know, I haven't talked about the individual strategies yet, but all this is in preparation. You know, all the components have to be in place. And if they are, you're going to unlock the power of that team, and you're really going to find, you know, tremendous ideas and value. It happens all the time.
And this will take place whether it's domestic or international. Everyone, people are people. You tap into that wonderful space inside them, and people start sharing ideas. Is that a good observation?
That's exactly right, Dana. And the environment is really important. You know, I think it was maybe in an earlier space I was going to talk about it, but you know, having that environment set, you know, I find it's very important to keep people very stimulated in a very creative space. When I do, you know, an offsite process or planning process, I have music and I have toys and I play, you know, funny video clips, and I'm stimulating people all of the time. And that's really what helps, again, to unlock the power of the team. Sitting people down and saying, okay, in a very linear fashion, we have to come up with something, will only get you so far. It doesn't get you to those, you know, very creative, exceptional new ideas and breakthroughs.
Hmm. Okay, that's good insight.
Okay. In terms of the offsite, again, you know, communication between everybody is really key. And I mentioned to you that in the pre-work, I wind up inviting people, you know, to take the online survey, and we'll create some benchmarks for how is the communication flowing. And if there's some work that needs to be done on that, and it's indicative of what the culture is or the values are, you know, the discussions need to be held. I mentioned the SWOT. That's short for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And that is really, you know, basically an assessment of a company, you know, at large, or a division, whatever the operating unit is that you're planning for. And I find that this is one of the most key, you know, key tools in this entire planning process, because from within this SWOT comes, you know, virtually every issue that's going on within a company, whether it's strengths, you know, that a company needs to leverage upon, or weaknesses that they need to overcome, you know, or opportunities to be capitalized on, or threats to be avoided. By going through this process, I find that the most important initiatives just drop out. And those, and when I say the initiatives, I would say that initiatives would support the strategies that the company wants to employ for the next year, or 3 years, or 5 years. And many times I get a question, a company say, I want to do a 5-year, a 10-year, a 20-year planning horizon. And my view is, many times it's very difficult to really be looking at 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. You may want to do it at a very high level, but to spend days on that, many times I find doesn't get the return. I think there's a greater return on the upcoming 3 years and the next year. And so I also find that companies go through a big formal process. They write up a big strategic plan. It's a binder. It's a really thick binder. It sits on somebody's credenza, and then at the end of the year, they wind up dusting it off and saying, so what did we get done as part of the planning for the next year? Only to find out that there were so many initiatives taken on, it almost became overwhelming. It did become too overwhelming. I'm a firm believer that an organization should really take on no more than 2 to 3 key strategic objectives and objectives for the upcoming year, and those would be the most important. And that's what you would cover in this planning process. So that's a process of negotiation and sharing and building consensus around those. And then initiatives really fall within those 3 strategies. But I find it's very difficult for a company to take on more than just 3 items. Things just don't get done. Dilutes the effectiveness.
That's a really good point. That's a really good...
Well, it happens all the time. And so what happens is you do a marginal job of many things instead of really, you know, and I think this process, the value of this process is really, you know, really forcing people to prioritize. And we're going to talk about this in the follow-up, but just because you say these are the top 2 or 3 priorities, and then everybody needs to be very clear on why are these going to be the top 2 or 3 strategies that are going to have the biggest impact on the company going forward, it's important to be reevaluating that, being clear on, you know, what were the reasons behind that and why, and are those and looking as we continue to move forward, since we're in such a dynamic business environment, are those, do those reasons change, and do we need to reprioritize? Because every organization that I'm, that I've worked with and that I'm aware of, you know, there is a limitation on resources, whether it's human, financial, or otherwise. And it's just how to, you know, I think it's incumbent upon the senior executive leadership team to really be accountable for how do we get the greatest amount of leverage and return on those resources that we have available. And that's what this process does. Okay, and so along with that, you know, we create the strategies, but then it's having the goals, the action items, the timelines, the accountabilities, metrics, and so forth. I think that's an important part of this process so that you really know if the reasons that you selected these items are legitimate, you're going to see the results in a very tangible way and in a very measurable way. And there's always ways to measure even soft items, but the importance is, you know, being very specific. And I think that's really critical, is that you really drive it down to the lowest level of detail.
That's great. Those are, that's good stuff.
Okay, and then to shift with, you know, the buy-in, you know, if you've done this process right, hopefully along the way, everybody's really clear, everybody's had input, you've been guided so that everybody's position is heard, and the safe space is created so that everyone can step into it and offer their candid views, and, you know, without any type of reprisal or without any ridicule, and with a lot of respect. And so what I find is that with all those steps in place, it really is easy to gain the consensus of the group and gain the commitment. And when you say consensus, sometimes there are some varying, you know, definitions on consensus. Some people would say in order to have consensus, everybody has to completely agree 100% that it is the best and only option and direction. And when I work with a group, I think the consensus definition is a little broader, which means that the team would all agree to support it, It may, for some individuals, they may not believe that it is the absolute best or top solution, but because of the conversation and support that's been offered, they can agree to support it. And I think that is what contributes to building consensus, you know, within the team. And it is that continued discussion and dialogue until everybody that's on that team feels comfortable that they can support, and we've addressed any objections, and everybody's very clear on how and why this is in the highest best interest of the organization, and can therefore, you know, make a commitment once you leave that room to, you know, to support it and to continue to drive it deep within the organization. Okay, and then the execution part. That's, you know, you leave with the action plan and specifics. And I'm a big believer that many times it is difficult for individuals to find the time to do some really creative thinking on the specifics and details behind an action plan. So I like to recommend to companies that a meaningful amount of time be created in this process, where the team is together and all the energy of the team is together and the synergy of the team is together, where they're actually creating very specific action plans, you know, and an open amount of space and time is allowed for them to do that, and then come back and report back and get feedback from the group. But it's all done while everybody's offsite, instead of saying, go back to the office and try and figure out how you squeeze it in. And then there's the accountability. It's the team agreeing upon, you know, how will people be held accountable for this? How will it be monitored and, you know, and reevaluated? And what's the frequency? And what's the, you know, and is there an openness and commitment to revise this? Instead of saying, okay, by God, we agreed that we're going to hire, you know, 100 employees this next year, and, you know, you're a quarter into it and you're realizing that maybe that doesn't really make sense, and we need to be open to scaling that back or redirecting resources.
So how often are there check-ins, Mark, throughout
the
year?
Well, my recommendation for a team is to have those check-ins at least quarterly. With all the clients and companies that I work with, the planning, the business planning, strategic planning process is a year-long, you know, an ongoing process. So it usually gets kicked off with a 2 or 3 day initial offsite, which is very heavily planned and prepared for, as I mentioned earlier. And then at the end of that, there are some guidelines that are created for the team in terms of, how frequently will they be meeting, and then how frequently will we reconvene as an entire group. So many times, organizations will have weekly staff meetings, they'll have monthly team meetings, but at a minimum, I like to have the company meet internally with the planning group on a monthly basis. It can be very quick, short, brief update. And then on a quarterly basis, we have a more extended, maybe it's a 6-hour session, where we go through and we say, so why did we select these key strategic, objectives and initiatives? And, are the reasons still the same? Are they still valid? Do we need to reevaluate and redirect given what's taken place in the market or in the company to reprioritize and maybe change the direction? So doing that on at least a quarterly basis is important so that you don't wind up at the end of the year either realizing nothing's happened or else you've invested a lot of resource and never really received a return on it.
And whether this is a for-profit company, public company, or hopefully they're for-profit, and or a non-profit, these keys or this process applies to everybody across the board. Is that?
Yeah, that's correct, Dana. The nonprofits may have a little different complexion. I work with some nonprofits where, and there is an exception with the nonprofits in terms of board members. Sometimes in a nonprofit environment, we will have a board and staff retreat where there's an opportunity to, to create some type of connection between the board and staff, and that's really important to the staff particularly in order to be able to move forward effectively because of the design of the, the oversight function.
We're gonna open the lineup in just a few minutes, but before and I'm going to turn off the recording equipment. But before we do that, Mark, could you summarize what we talked about today and some key things, but also about how to tap into the inner creativity, or maybe some people might call it the soul of the team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really believe that that's where the real opportunity for big leverage is. And, you have this incredible, resourceful team, and any one individual on the team could be extremely bright and capable, but as you get an entire team together, it really does become a synergistic effect. And it is a process. I mean, it's a process that starts with trust within the team. And sometimes the space has to be created, and I think that's really the key. And so many of the steps that I outlined earlier on the call really go to building, and creating the guidelines and the structure and the container to be able to unlock the power of that team and tap into the ideas and the wisdom and experience that, that the team has. And it really is, it's communication, communication, communication. And through a lot of the communication, and sometimes initially, it's helpful to have that guided and some guidelines created, some safety guidelines created, but also some guidance on how people can effectively communicate. And Dana, I know you guys do a lot of work helping teams with that, and I've actually used your tools with some of the teams that I've worked with, and it's been very effective. So the people do understand how the personalities interact and mesh, and don't take things personally, but understand that everybody's style is just fine, and they just need to understand how to work as a team. And I think that's the foundation for great business planning.
So it's a bonding time to get everybody on the same page and to create not only harmony but disruption at the same time.
Correct.
Okay.
And it has to, and the environment has to be safe where anybody can stand up and tell another teammate, I just don't think that's a good idea. That just doesn't make any sense. I don't buy it. And be able to respectfully challenge, because if that doesn't come unless the space is safe and also there's somebody that's able to help guide that. And I think highly performing teams are at that point where you can have a session and people can say, that's not a good idea, that doesn't make any sense, or that's too far out there, and not be concerned that they're being politically, correct. It takes a lot of energy to kind of tactfully and diplomatically manage, the communication.
And if teams aren't able to do that, that's probably indicating there's a problem.
Correct.
I would think. Okay.
Correct.
All right. And
people don't feel safe in doing that. Sometimes it's helpful to bring in somebody to, you know, to just help, because that in and of itself will help people to survive. What I find, and we were talking about this before the call started, CEOs right now are frustrated, or leaders of units are frustrated, because the rules have changed over the last few years. You can't go back to what's always worked, and we have to be open to change. And along with that, we have to look at what kind of resources are available to help with that. And I think highly effective leaders really see that all the decisions don't have to be on their shoulders, that they do have an opportunity for a lot of support, and they have to be open and feel comfortable asking for that support and truly listening to that support, listening to the input and ideas. And I think that's where the future is. It's really about collaboration more so than competition. It's how do you open up the teams to more collaboration, and I've seen amazing things happen, Dana.
I know the companies you work with, Mark, they truly are amazing, and it takes someone with the gift to help facilitate and bring these things out of the group and then help guide them to the execution, and that takes a special gift, which you have.
Well, thank you.
In just a few minutes, we're going to conclude the show. And I know some of you have to run off to meetings, and we're going to send the slides and the audio. For those of you who are able to hang around a little bit further, and those of you in other countries that are staying up late, if you can hang on a little bit, just another minute, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with Mark. You'll see on your screen an area to register for our upcoming January 20th program 2011 Open Line, which is entitled 2011 and Beyond with futurist David Hooley, author of The Shift Age. Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program, and please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Mark and I want to thank you so much for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Mark directly for further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-on-one time together, or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see Mark's contact information on your screen. And also, if you go to where it says author of Unlock the Power of Your Team, you can download Mark's e-book, or you could also order a hard book, which is phenomenal, a must. Get it for your teams and share it. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in San Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Hold the line. I'm going to turn the recording equipment off, and then we're going to open up so you can talk directly to Mark for those of you who have time today.